Blog Talk Radio.
The Masons have a cell protected by a supernatural barrier designed by Thomas Jefferson.
Jefferson, huh? What was he like?
Oh, a true Renaissance man. Artisan, scholar.
How do you think a guy who wrote all men are created equal is justified owning slaves?
It's actually a good question.
I can say with some certainty that he recognized the severe immorality of it. He supported abolition in Virginia. Perhaps his first-hand experience added to his eloquence in drafting a document used to justify it.
Or maybe Sally Hemings inspired him.
Who is Miss Hemings?
Hogwash. Thomas was a loyal husband. Your press knows no bounds. They still favor salacious speculation to fact.
I once said to Thomas, a man who reads nothing at all is better educated than a man who reads nothing but newspapers. We had a good laugh about that one.
I hate to burst your bubble, but we have something called DNA evidence which scientifically proves that your pal, Thomas Jefferson, fathered 6 kids by one of his slaves, Sally Hemings.
I'm not to kick you while you're down, but Jefferson took credit for your line about the press.
Well, you never really know people, do you?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a liar.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerve Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerve.
Good evening, folks. This is the Afternerd, as the montage says. By the way, that opening sequence was from a recent episode, the latest episode of Sleepy Hollow. I dig Sleepy Hollow. It's kind of fantasy fluff. But because they're dealing with history, I have to give them kudos for having that little tidbit with the actors. Orlando Jones is in this film. You know him. I'm sorry, film. The TV series. You know him from Mad TV, and I can't recollect the young actress's name. But the fact that they're both African-American, speaking to Ichabod Crane, I apologize for not knowing that actor's name. I will soon. That to be semi-realistic, if you have two black folk who have the opportunity to speak to someone who's literally from the 19th century, it's fair game to ask certain questions. So I thought that that little exchange is what you need every once in a while to input a dose of reality with the dealing with the infamous Sally Hemings thing with Thomas Jefferson. I just thought that was funny. And they didn't have to do that. They didn't have to play it so straight, which many of these fantasy sci-fi vehicles, what they normally do, they pretend that the folks are not black or brown. You have to address it on occasion. So I thought I was pretty humorous and educational to perhaps the audience, and definitely educational to Ichabod Crane. Folks, again, you're not hallucinating. This is Thursday. Apologies abound for the preemption for Wednesday, but nevertheless, we're going to give you 90 minutes of fun to get into. Let's go to a quick urban alternative groove. This is classic funk, actually. Let's Work by His Royal Badness. That's exactly what we plan to do. Let's work, and let's groove. We'll be right back. Oh, in about 2.5 minutes.
Let's work.
Okay, we're back once again. This is the Midweek in Review, a delayed edition, Midweek in Review edition on Thursday of Afternoon Radio. And speaking of, well, I didn't mention him yet. What am I doing? The captain. The captain is in transit, but he is here as soon as I press this, as soon as I beam him in. Let's get to it. Captain, you are needed on the bridge. Post haste.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Can you read me? Can you read me?
Yes, loud and clear. Loud and
all
clear.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, I'm going to take something very... very, very convoluted, and then break it down into the simplistic and rather mundane. Now listen. Listen up. And this is really beyond most people's pay grade. So stand back and let AfroNerd and Captain Kirk do what we do, because this is beyond your pay grade. Now, there's a meme, or should I say a thought form, that I see going through the internet and also in the black community. People are asking at this given time, how come we don't have men such as Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, or Muhammad Ali right now? So I'm going to explain this to you, why we don't have these type of men. Scientists have known for a very long time that you're a byproduct of your biological factors and environmental factors. In other words, what your parents give you, your DNA, and the environment. Scientists also know that DNA is a double helix. Simply put, for the uninitiated, DNA is a sender and receiver of information. That means it is constantly changing. Now, to the more simplistic and mundane. Let's say I take a baby born of black parents here in America as soon as it's born, and I drop it off in Russia. What language will it develop? It's not going to be American, English. It'll be Russian. And the same thing, if I do the same thing with the same baby and drop it in China, it will develop Mandarin Chinese or Cantonese or Fukienese or the various languages that they have in China. It won't be English. Take the same baby and take it to Venezuela, it will speak Spanish. See, all babies are born with the ability to learn a language from their environment, but they're not born knowing the language. Now, that being said, to put it very simple, the reason why you do not have the Malcolm X's, the Muhammad Ali's, the Martin Luther King's right now, you do not have the culture that develops the means that develop these individuals. These men came about under something called race war. Remember white only? You remember Jim Crow laws? You remember pig laws? You remember Knight Riders, KKK? Still have the KKK around. And other things. This environment breeds these type of men. You're underneath multiculturalism at this given time. And you have to follow the energy of multiculturalism. Realize something. realize this. Extreme tribalism underneath multiculturalism breaks down into racism. How so, Captain? How so? You see what happens when these people, let's say white people, let's say they work for Hewlett-Packard, IBM, or Bank of America, and they send out a racist tweet. What happens when they come into work on the Monday or Tuesday? They lose their job. Take these same people and put them in a monoculture, the person who is extremely tribal. They're not a racist. They become a warrior. There's a difference. We are here underneath multiculturalism, and you have to follow the flow of energy of multiculturalism at this given time. Now, later on, when it switches, you will have to follow that energy. But right now, follow the flow of the multiculturalism energy. That means if you like a Latin woman, if you like a black woman, if you like a white woman, whatever you like, Asian woman, grease it up, get your freaky on, and keep it moving, and shut your mouth. Back over to you, Sir Raphael Nerd.
Okay. I don't know if I can follow that, Captain. I got to ask a question, though. So do you see multiculturalism as a negative or just the way things are?
Well, here's the reality of it, all right? Now, when we were not underneath this guise of multiculturalism, the black man, truth be told, was in the household. We didn't have the out-of-wedlock birth rate. Didn't have it. We had the Negro Leagues. Didn't have it. Now, yes, there are more people, black people, going to college today. But where do you have to work? You see, Oprah Winfrey even has her own version of shop and frisk. Billionaire Oprah Winfrey. Why? Because she has to spend the dollars in the white power structure. This is what it is. Now, let's talk about white people. White people underneath this multiculturalism. What happened to your 1950s lifestyle? Meaning which? Trophy wife, the two new cars in the driveway, house picket fence, kids going to college, the man working and the woman sitting home. It's getting more and more rare. Let's talk about it. Where's the money going? You know where the money goes to? You have to take care of useless eaters, whether they're white trash that is useless, whether it's black trash that's useless, or whether it's Latin trash or anything in between. So them too, they don't have the same lifestyle. There's a lot of changes going on right now since then. So I'm just looking at the facts. I'm not either pro or against. I just lay out the facts and make you look at it and you decide. Right now, we're underneath multiculturalism. We have to follow the energy. Those that go against the energy, they will get checked. But now if it goes elsewhere, the energy changes, you will have to follow that. Something for everybody to think about. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Raphael Nerd.
All right. You know what? We will probably dovetail on that, or off of that, I should say, in the few topics ahead going forward, because I want to give credit to Dr. Henry Lewis, Dr. Henry Skip Gates, because of his specials. It's been going on for since toward the end of October and going into this month. He has a rather just a really great piece called "The African Americans: Many Rivers to Cross." Again, "The African Americans: Many Rivers to Cross." And I have great admiration for Dr. Gates, although, and I've said this on countless occasions, that he did lose some cool points with me with the whole beer summit deal and what happened on Harvard's campus, because he refused to comport himself in accordance to his lane. He's a Harvard professor. I mean, I've said this before. I'm pretty sure the audience is aware how I feel on this. I just thought that he was being somewhat disingenuous about who he was. I call myself the Afro Nerd, not just for branding, but because it's an accurate description. And if I decided to conduct myself outside the lines of what an Afro nerd is, then I'm going to pay for that. And to say something to the police, I believe he said, your mama's on the porch. If you conducted yourself like the professor that you are, this wouldn't have happened. But he felt like, well, actually, I thought about this earlier, Captain. And some African-Americans of note, middle-class, upper-middle-class black folk, professional black folk, they have a type of guilt where they believe that on occasion they will have to conduct themselves like the lower tier brethren because of tribalism. And that's not what that should be about. It just shouldn't be about that way. That's not the way you operate within tribalism, or you should operate within tribalism, but be who you are. I thought he was being somewhat phony with trying to align himself with someone who might have been in a similar situation from a street perspective. You're on Harvard's campus. Anyway, I digress. I'm going to go more into this great piece. Besides that one moment in his history, this documentary, just an excellent documentary, and I would hope, well, first of all, I would advise our audience to check out this thing on PBS. And matter of fact, it's available for a brief time. They allow these videos to remain on the PBS website. So I can't take anything away from his acumen, his skill in these documentaries. And he goes into a little bit about what the captain was talking about. When you really see what black folk were doing 50, 100 years ago, creating a true infrastructure. Black folks were creating an infrastructure a few decades out of slavery. And for some reason, we're stuck slavery. Or I should say 100 years post-slavery. But 30 years, 25, 30 years, Reconstruction and beyond, black folks were actually conducting themselves in a certain manner. Well, I'll get into that in a moment. Anecdotally, I'm going to give you the anecdote. You know, we have the anecdote, Captain, and we have the blue area. Let's label the African-Americans as a blue area segment because I think there's a lot to talk about within his I believe it's a five-part special, five points in African-American history that are so noteworthy, so important, that I would hope that this, of course our audience would be about this. This is not a big deal. Our children, younger folk, teenagers, Generation X, well, X too, but Generation Y, I was getting that confused. Generation Y, those folks, I would be hard-pressed to not understand or to believe that they cannot feel something based on what's been laid out, again, rather masterfully from Dr. Gates, as to just what happened, some of these stories, the kind of things that these black folks had to deal with and how they triumphed, and what we're seeing today. When you juxtapose what's happening today that we see today and juxtapose that with the excellence under duress, and when the captain was talking about multiculturalism, and more importantly, apartheid, Jim Crow, all those insidious laws, the grandfather clause, you know the history. What we had to deal with, it does make someone wonder. It makes me wonder, do we need that kind of stress to excel? I hope not. Anyway, a couple of things. First of all, W. Kamau Bell, he had a show, and you heard me right. I'm extremely saddened that this comedian, that his show called Totally Biased, I believe, is going to have a cancellation going into the latter part of this week or early next week. It's pretty much canceled. I believe it was highly rated when it was on FX, but then Fox created an alternate channel called FXX. So they moved a successful show. This is commonplace. They moved a successful show around, whether they move it to another day. In this case, they actually expanded it for full 5 days. It was only shown once a week. Then they expanded it to 5 days a week, put it on an alternate network, and as soon as they moved the show to this alternate network, maybe three-quarters of its viewership was erased. So that's problematic because although I don't agree with Mr. Bell's politics, because he has said this. I was listening to some podcasts with Mr. Bell, not even his own podcast. This is another podcast. He has a podcast with Vernon Reed, the guitarist from Living Color. They have a podcast called The Field Negro. The Field Negro's Guide to Arts and Entertainment, I believe. Anyway, admittedly, and rabidly a liberal. Matter of fact, he said that when he was residing in San Francisco, he was more of a Democrat, and that at some point, being a Democrat is not left enough for him. So I just don't always agree with that progressive leftist mindset that black folk are supposed to have. Repeat, supposed to have. But aside from that, aside from his politics, I thought that he had a great opportunity to showcase and highlight alternative blackness, alternative black culture, Afro-nerdism. There was definitely a conflux of some of the things that we discussed on this show that I saw on his show. He was at the Afropunk Festival this past summer. He had Unlocking the Truth, this teenage black rock band. He had Death, the punk band Death. They were on. So there's many things that he was highlighting, showing. I believe he even might have visited Comic-Con. I'm almost positive he visited Comic-Con. So there were things he was doing to push our agenda. So I'm highly disappointed that this show. And it makes you wonder that, you know, when there's a show that really, really tries to depict black folk in a different light. Matter of fact, I believe in one of the podcasts he referenced Tyler Perry in a rather negative light. He said he would probably not say it the way that he said it in the past. But at least I understand that. I like to hear that. I stopped lambasting Tyler Perry to a certain degree because they're just a set of black folk that just are into Tyler Perryism. Shouting out Sergio Mims, our friend from Chi-Town. He knows. You know, Tyler Perry has no, in my eyes, in my estimation, the Oracle speaks about this. The Oracle, for those who are just new listeners, the Oracle is the tangential producer. I think that's his tagline, Captain. The tangential producer of Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. He's also my father. He doesn't understand the Tyler Perry thing. But then again, we're Spike Lee people. It's easy, you know. Spike Lee highlights jazz music. He highlights brownstones in Brooklyn. You know, he's got a whole different the black college educated scene. That's not Tyler Perry's crew. So on some level, you have to be logical and really come to grips that, which is what we promote here, different types of black folks. Different agendas, different upbringings. I just don't like the stranglehold that the minstrels and the criminal element and the thuggish element. I don't care for the stranglehold of definition over what qualifies and quantifies as blackness. It is always this conflation between ghetto behavior and it equaling black. That's just black. And that's the end of the conversation. That has to stop. So I lament the cancellation of W. Kamau Bell's Totally Biased, produced by Chris Rock, incidentally. One other thing. Now, this is more another anecdote. I don't like necessarily being right all the time. I know it may sound that way, Captain. It may sound that way. I do like to be challenged, and I don't mind if I have to do some kind of capitulation. If something comes up, the math doesn't work, I'll say, okay, wait, you know what? I'm going to have to look at this in a different light. But I'm always seeing something that proves my point. Case in point, open up the New York Post, which is a rag. Oh, yes, it's a rag. Although it has a conservative bent, still a rag. Rupert Murdoch's outfit. You know, he's getting sued up the wazoo, England, for shenanigans in the press. Anyway, this story, ladies and gentlemen, really encapsulates my point and the captain's viewpoint when we talk about presentation and what a profile is and what a composite is and how this really works, how it really works. Now, there was a New York – this has nothing to do with race, incidentally. This is dealing with a white female. This is not a racial issue. Again, it deals with a profiling issue that when the math is applied, because the math doesn't change. White female, New York City, she had a New York prostitution case that was dismissed recently. The case was dismissed. The irony is, the woman is a prostitute. Why do you think, ladies and gentlemen, why do you think her case was dismissed, having spoken about incessantly, ad infinitum, about not fitting a profile? You know what? We have an hour. I'm going to give you the other half. I'm going to answer that question after a quick musical break. Folks, join in. The water is warm. Again, this is Thursday. You know that. It will always be Wednesday, but this one point we had a preemption, but our apologies anyway. So we'll be back with the Urban Alternative Groove, after the Urban Alt Groove, excuse me. The call-in number, don't be scared, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. And we'll get into what happened with this prostitution case as the anecdote continues. This is another classic from a seminal movie, Eddie Murphy, incidentally. I think it's probably his best movie, believe it or not. I think 48 Hours. From the boys are back in town. And again, give you the best of black rock, Afropunk. Let's groove, folks.
We've been waiting for a long time. Yes, we've been waiting for a long, long time. We've been waiting for a long time. But we ain't gonna wait no more. We're getting ready to rock and roll. We're gonna 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. Well, there's a reason everybody should be shaking in the house tonight. And you should grab your favorite lady and promise her you'll do it right. Tell Fat Jack to jump back and give you a shot of some booze, so you can party to the stomp down, but stomp and rock and roll.
The boys are back in
the boys are back in town, folks. That was the Bus Boys from 1982's 48 Hours. I think Eddie Murphy's, perhaps Eddie Murphy's best, even acting. You know, he was fresh out of SNL. Did he continue doing SNL? I know pretty much that movie catapulted him into stardom. But I thought that was, I think it was a Walter Hill directed movie. I just thought it was a great movie. I think it probably still holds up. And I thought that for someone who really, because we knew Eddie Murphy to a certain degree being New Yorkers. He was very unaffected. I'll leave it at that. He did not appear to be he's younger too. He's like 21 at that point, or 19, maybe not even that. I think he was 19 or 20. But he didn't have that Hollywood flavor that he has now. He seemed to be a bit more straight-laced, I'll put it at that. Anyway, for someone to be a homegrown person from New York / Long Island, he used to be tooling around Long Island. Mr. Starks can talk about that more succinctly even, having, you know, he would see Eddie Murphy when he was just gotten the gig at SNL, and he distinctly talks about how he would tool around in a Porsche 928 and a Datsun 280Z at that time. And folk looked at him in wonderment that a young man had his own house, two cars, working at SNL at the top of his game locally, and then proceeded to get this Walter Hill-directed movie, and that the movie was actually quite good. Thought that even his, just for a first time actor, he played it straight. Whatever happened after that, you know, I'll leave it up to the audience. All right. Again, folks, you're not hallucinating. This is Thursday, and this is the Midweek in Review edition, the delayed edition. Anyway, before the break, I was talking about this prostitution case in NYC as an anecdote that was thrown out. So I'm going to read this briefly. I think this is from Jezebel.com, probably also connected to the New York Post article. I think they might have actually just given you a quick highlight of what they said in the New York Post. I'm going to read this briefly, and I want you to clearly understand what's going on here, because it dovetails off of what the captain and I say consistently about what profiling really is about. Anyway, an illegal and in New York City led to a hilarious courtroom disquisition about what sort of woman's clothing is actually part of a sex worker's wardrobe. Much to the surprise of certain finger-wagging old-timers, tight, contour-enhancing jeans and a pea coat are most certainly not a part of said wardrobe, though they're grounds for being arrested of suspicion of prostitution. According to the Post, okay, that's their little dig at the Post, Manhattan Judge Felicia Menon dismissed a woman's prostitution case, saying the NYPD failed miserably in its attempt to profile the woman based on her outfit, black pea coat, skinny jeans, and platform shoes. These clothing items are not necessarily found only on sex workers, though it'd be wrong to assume that sex workers don't appreciate the timeless pragmatism in all its permutations represents. NYPD officers spotted the peacoat-clad woman speaking to three people in Midtown Manhattan within a 20-minute period. It was very late at night. The woman's heels were distressingly, toe-achingly high. Her jeans, according to the arresting officers, were too revealing. In her decision, Judge Menon dismissed the officer's appraisal of the woman's outfit, explaining, any current issue of a fashion magazine would display plenty of women similarly dressed. However, the choice of such outfit hardly demonstrates the wearer's proclivity to engage in prostitution. Let's see. Further proving her sartorial acuity, Menon added, granted this incident occurred in the middle of winter, however, a pea coat is still standard issue to members of the U.S. Navy, and blue jeans, skin tight or baggy, are practically an American icon. Okay, now, again, this woman was a prostitute. She had a lengthy rap sheet, Captain. I want you to weigh in on this. But her. She didn't, at that moment, when it came down to scrutiny, for this one instance, she got a breather because she wasn't wearing the prostitution's uniform. So when you and I go back and forth to our listenership, but our listenership knows this, let's say to the naysayers that say you don't have, you know, that there's no such thing as a profile. I've been told this on countless shows that I've called into, that I've played for the audience, and people will rather coyly say to me, what's a profile? What's a profile? I'm sorry, there is a profile. If you don't conform to the profile, even if you are doing dirt, it gets hard to scrutinize you. But when you wear the profile, Captain, your thoughts? We got to talk about this.
To put it simply, if she had looked the part, she would have been convicted. Based on her priors, and if she had on the uniform. She didn't have on the uniform, so they can't say that she was doing her prostitute duties. She might have just been for a stroll, and these officers could have been targeting her unjustifiably. It's real simple. It is real simple. There's nothing convoluted here. This is very simple, very mundane. She didn't have on the normal modus operandi, to put it simply, the uniform, the prostitute outfit. So she walked when she went to court. That's all. That's all. And this is what you individuals don't get. You know, there's an old saying, it walk like a duck, it quack like a duck. Chances are it's a duck. Now, if a police officer walks down a block, or should I say, a person who's dressed up like a police officer, what do you do if you're in a situation that needs a police officer? You will approach them as if they are a police officer. But they might not be. They could be perpetrating a police officer. But in your mind, it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it must be a police officer. The person in the police uniform fit the profile of a police officer. You see how it works? This is not that difficult. The wage slave zombie and you gormless feral menstrual beast that walk the streets with your pants sagging, you're supposed to understand this and get this. That's all. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
You're going to move along, but didn't I mention this a few shows ago, shouting out our friend from the Inner Sanctum, Sally B., who was pursuing a degree in computer science at City College, and she's a friend of ours, and she is aware of lower tierism. She's a Latina from the Dominican Republic, shouting out also Sergio. Sergio, when things get a little hot, he will pull out his Dominican card with the Negroes, and if things cool off, then he will retract that card. But I'm just saying that playfully. Anyway, she proceeded to send me an email. And I mentioned this before, folks, and I will never forget this email because it glaringly proves our point. Student on this campus, young woman, she picks up a flyer for this support of Stop and Frisk. In support of dismantling Stop and Frisk. So it's an anti-Stop and Frisk rally, and in the flyer they say, Wear your dark clothing, put your hoodie up, in some kind of six cents of solidarity, and then in the same email, she sends me the campus blotter with quite a few cases of theft and violence on campus, people getting punched out, this sick knockout game. I didn't even get into that. I think Mike Coy, our friend Tokyo Mike, sent us a link. It was Mike Coy, or it might be Q Storm. I'm sorry, and I apologize. But he was mentioning some knockout game, some sick knockout game that's occurring in Jersey, where it seems to be predominantly young black males that are just punching out people. just as a joke. And some of them, or many of them, happen to be white. I don't think all of them are, but many of them appear to be white. So there's that element also. But anyway, this blotter clearly describes the uniform, dark clothing, and hoods. We're just going to rush in. Fools rush in, Captain. Fools rush in. So I wish someone would explain this to me. What am I saying that's so dangerous or so reprehensible? It's just illogical. Why would we try to promote this uniform? And what are people supposed to do, the people who are the victims and these countless stories of people that are clearly wearing this uniform, and the cops are, the police are supposed to ignore this uniform that's been described as a perp? We're not owning up to this confusion. That's all I want to say. Can we at least agree that A, that there's a profile, and B, that this is confusing? I think even in a joke, you know what, Captain? Again, let me I can find this thing. There's a skit that I've played before. I think I might have played it as a intro, a skit by the great Dave Chappelle. And sometimes we have to rely on our humorists, because when someone tells it to you straight, you might not get it. But when someone tells it to you in a joke, somehow it becomes more clear to you. I can't find this thing right now. All right, but here we go. Just listen to it, folks. This is his How Women Dress skit. Hold on.
You can see it. You ever have this happen? This is how confusing it is. This is the practical application of what I'm talking about. Like, a guy be out. This happened to a lot of guys. You be out at a club, bar, right? He's kicking with your boys, and a girl walks by, and man, she looks good. She looks good. Not good in that classical way. I mean, you know, I'm talking good. Like, she got half her ass hanging out her skirt. Her titties are all mashed together, popping out the top of her turtleneck and shit. And you with your buddies, right? You with your buddies. You got a couple drinks in you. And you see a girl like this, you might try to talk to her. This might not come out right. I don't know what you say, but damn, look at them titties! The girl gets mad at you. Oh, wait a minute. Just because I'm dressed this way does not make me a whore. Which is true. Gentlemen, that is true. Just because they dress a certain way doesn't mean they are a certain way. Don't ever forget it. But ladies, you must understand that is fucking confusing. Just is. Now, that would be like me, Dave Chappelle, the comedian, walking around the streets in a cop uniform. Somebody might run up on me. Oh, thank God. Officer, help us. Come on, they're over here. Help us. Oh, man. Oh, just because I'm dressed this way does not make me a police officer. You understand what I'm saying? It's like, all right, ladies, fine. You are not a whore. But you are wearing a whore's uniform. I'll tell you that for right now.
I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. again, excuse the expletives. The captain and myself, we said the same thing, not in such a humorous cadence, but what Mr. Chappelle has said. Tell by how the audience's reaction that it is what it is. Clearly.
Funny as hell. Funny as all get out, boy.
All right. Moving right along. Again, folks, this is the Midweek Review edition of Afternoon Radio featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. All right. getting a little bit of feedback there from you, Catherine. I'm just going to put you on mute for a moment, and then I'll bring you back in. I want to talk about Goldie Taylor, MSNBC's Goldie Taylor, versus CNN's Don Lemon, still on this stop and frisk thing. I might have alluded to this previously when this thing first occurred. Actually, Goldie Taylor has had a bug about Don Lemon when he went off script, allegedly, with his 5 points plan for black folk, and he agreed on one or two points, one or two out of 1,000, mind you. I mean, I think it's pretty well established that Lemon, who is openly gay, works for CNN, that he is a liberal. I would suspect he's a liberal. But there was a moment where what in a diatribe that O'Reilly went into this rant, that he agreed with them on maybe one or two points. That was blasphemous in the world of some of these progressives. So Taylor has had a bug. Ms. Taylor from MSNBC has had a real bug about Don Lemon. And Don Lemon now has another gig with, why can't I recollect the talk shows? I can't think of his name right now. Anyway, he has another gig, and he's got a moment where he's able to discuss some issues. And he talked about stop and frisk in a nuanced way. In a nuanced way. I don't have a problem with nuance. I think, you know, it's called balance. But if you don't agree lockstep, I mean, this is very much what people accuse conservatives, or I should say these right-wing Republicans, that if you go off script with them, it's a problem. And you can't be a progressive and scream that, and there might be a legitimate critique. You can't be progressive, scream on the Republicans who employ stay on message with some of their folk, but when one of your folk doesn't stay on message on one or two issues, then you can't scream on them because then you lose credibility. The whole house of cards falls down. So I'm going to play this clip of Goldie Taylor where she's talking about something's wrong with Don Lemon. Something's wrong with the man. Just because he has a different opinion, this hegemony of thought that many of us have in the black community, and this inability to speak politically incorrect, incorrect, I should say. Political correctness is killing us, literally. So I don't understand how it sounds crazy, folks. Let's listen to Ms. Taylor lambaste Mr. Lemon on his view on stop and frisk. Hold on.
Don Lemon from CNN posted a piece on Facebook where he questioned some of the attacks on stop and frisk. First of all, he said that it should be called stop, question, and frisk. And if it were, then people have a greater understanding or may embrace it more fully. The second part of this thing was he said that, you know, stop and frisk was willing the police's police department's way of protecting the black community. Well, you know, I had a visceral reaction to it, but, you know, I had a few questions for it. The first question was, given our social contract with this America, how much of our civil liberties are we supposed to give up in the name of in the name of public safety? So yesterday I posted the first Breaking Black piece, and it dealt principally with really the politics of respectability and how our parents really played into that, how they dressed us up to take us to the mall or to the airport or a restaurant, you know, and then how we had to conduct ourselves. You know, really looking back, those were tools, mechanisms that our parents used as self-protection, self-preservation. They believed that if we comported ourselves in a certain way, if we studied harder in school, if we tightened our belt or shined our shoes, showed ourselves worthy, then we could have more of this great American dream. To some extent, that's true. If you work hard, if you conduct yourself in an orderly fashion, there probably is more out here for you to get. But to let that argument stand on its own really is tragic and simplistic. Because the fact of the matter is, in this country, and this is not politically correct, this is about human rights. Black boys, brown boys, and men in this country have the right to walk the street unimpeded by law enforcement unless probable cause, strong cause, is to stop and frisk them. And so what law enforcement agencies across this country have done, and it's not just New York City, it's my hometown in St. Louis, where police departments have decided that they can take this a bit further. And so if you're a black male living in New York City, chances are you have been not only stopped and frisked once, but multiple times this year. Not because necessarily what you're wearing, but where you live. And principally the color of your skin. They have a age range that they target. And so if you're my son walking through the streets of Harlem, walking through the streets of the Bronx, may or may not be a great idea if you don't want to encounter the police. Those kinds of infringements on the civil liberties of black boys and men in this country result in the over-incarceration of black men. It results in the breakdown of African-American families. It tears at the fabric of communities. It places those black boys and men in the position of not being able to be gainfully and fully employed later. It stops the educational process. And so when you over-police a certain community, certainly you're going to have a disproportionate number of arrests. And so stop and frisk goes much further than just a routine stop and asking a few questions and somebody is on their way. It is a full-scale assault on civil liberties of black boys and men, and the very notion that someone who he himself is a black man would condone this kind of behavior is a little bit confusing to me, to say the least.
Oh, boy. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, I don't necessarily want to rehash stop and frisk because my opinion on it, of it, is pretty well documented. I've said before, and even the captain knows, I mean, and the captain looks at this purely from a legal perspective, and I understand that too, the legality of stop and frisk. But where some of this falls apart with what she said, well, first of all, my main argument is, why can't Mr. Lemon have an opinion? I've dealt with this even as, I believe, on Coco Mode's show in the beginning when I spoke with her about this. I got that feeling that, well, you're black. How can you possibly be be in favor of stop and frisk? How can you possibly be a Republican? Why do you listen to rock music? You go to comic book conventions. What are you doing? This is what Jonathan Martin experienced in the thuggish locker room in Miami, I suspect. You went to Stanford? What are you a weirdo? What are you doing? You know, even when the president came about, you know, he speaks so well. What are you doing? Why do you go to Afropunk? What's your deal? I mean, this is the ruination of black folk. Do you know how many holes are in that argument? I mean, you have to be able to present an argument that cannot be deconstructed. And what she said, there's some deconstruction going on. I see we have a call. We're going to get to the call in a moment. First of all, I want to understand. Captain, I want you to come in on this as well. And then we're going to move along to the African-American special by the great Dr. Henry Louis Gates. What I don't understand is belief that many blacks, I'm very adroit in how I qualify and quantify what I say. I didn't say all blacks, but many black people. This belief that, A, profile is a dirty word. There's no such thing as a profile. There's no such thing as a composite. There's no such thing as recidivist or repeated behavior. So we have to, in that world, you can't mention some of these things. Where their argument falls apart for me is when 9/11 occurred and black folk were asked about the profiling of Muslim folk, they said, oh, yeah. Now, at the time, I distinctly remember in my head, before that answer came, I said, oh, well, these black folks are going to be against this. They're going to be against this. There's no way. And they said, oh, no. We pretty much approve of profiling of Muslim folk, black people now. So either you are against profiling on principle or you are against profiling of black folk. Because the other folk that share your complexion that are being, quote, unquote, hemmed up because of terrorism, they're being profiled. But you agree to that. You agree to that, black man. Why? Because you feel that what's going on around you is so great, that the prospect of violence is so great that we have to take precautions, that we have to do our own data mining. And speaking of data mining, sorry, Cap, because I'm getting a feedback. Just one moment, and then I'll bring you in. Speaking of data mining, there was also a statistic that came out, and I mentioned this before on the show, that when the Snowden case came about, dealing with the government's alleged wiretapping of private conversations, phone calls, and of Internet usage, it came across that in black media, that wasn't a major issue with black folk. Just the Snowden case, everyone else was talking about Snowden, but black folks really didn't, you know, they didn't seem to have a big deal about that level of intrusiveness. Now, going through your emails, going through your internet life, going through your phone records, that to me is highly intrusive because of what you're dealing, because of the prospect of terrorism, they believe it to be a necessary evil, this data mining. So when I said this is urban data mining, as I don't see why I can't make that comparison. A few days ago, a young man, Brian Park in New York, tried to take another young man's jacket. It was a lousy jacket in street fashion. An $800 kind of goose jacket that was popular but was prone to being stolen. And the jacket has since been discontinued. It went from $800 to $200. If you saw this picture of this jacket, ladies and gentlemen, it is a lot. I mean, not that any jacket will be worthy of death, but this jacket is just, it's nothing special about this jacket. It's just popular. A young man, allegedly gang-affiliated, attempted to take this jacket from a young man of color, a man of Latin descent, unsuccessfully, in anger, leaves, then comes back and shoots up the place. No one was killed. I believe that the gentleman with the jacket was shot in the leg, and another young man, 14 years of age, who had nothing to do with this, will probably be paralyzed for the rest of his life. He proceeds to go to his home, this miscreant, and proceeds to go to his Facebook and talk about what he just did. The feds are on me. The feds are at my door. N-word this, N-word that. This is going on in a specific area with black and brown youth of a certain age, of a certain culture and dress, and they cannot be profiled. We can't do the appropriate thing. So we just have to – she just talked about – Ms. Taylor talked about should we deal with civil liberties versus the right to public access and public safety. She's so casual about it, ladies and gentlemen, but I'm not casual about this balancing act. I mean, maybe some civil liberties have to be diminished if we can keep our boys working. Can't the young man he was a roller. It was a roller rink, a skating rink. Sorry, skating rink. Can't the young man have a moment of pleasure in skating without worrying about a bullet lodged into his spine? The progressives never deal with that rather human element. They never deal with the what's happening on the ground. This young man is not going to be able. I hope he's able. I hope somehow through some miracle he's able to walk. But the prognosis is not good. He could have been dead. And he had nothing to do with it. The young man wanted to keep his jacket, albeit a lousy jacket. Didn't deserve to get shot in the leg. These young people were minding their own business, and this one guy comes in, so we can't rifle through him. You know, this is going on. This is the reality that people are living in. Babies are dying, young men, the elderly. This is a problem of a grand scale statistically, and we can't do urban data mining. We can't do it. All right, Captain, and then we go to the call. Sorry about the Captain. You had some feedback.
How do you read me? I still have feedback?
Fine. No, I don't hear it. I don't hear it. Before,
okay.
I could hear me.
Okay.
I still hear it a little bit. But go ahead.
Well, as said before on different diatribes, it's like a broken record that's skipping on the part. Which, pertaining to stop and frisk, if it's found constitutional, then you can carry it out. If it's found unconstitutional, you have to stop it. Now, that being said, that's very A to B, one to one. Now, let's take this somewhere else. When it comes to violent crime, the black and brown that have the higher incidence of violent crime. And that's just the reality. Now, there's a lot of reasons for this. But the root cause, when you're dealing with the black and brown, is the mere fact that the black man, and also the Latin man, because we have the statistics, we spoke about it at ad nauseum, right here on the Afro-Nerd Radio featuring Captain Kirk. The black man is not in the household. So when the black man is not in the household, there's a lot of reasons for that. There's a tendency for the children, not all, because some of these black women do actually do a good job, but there's a tendency for these children, these offspring, to go feral. And this is the end result, the violent crime. Now let's understand America and what America is. Everyone needs to understand what America is. America has never, ever been concerned with black life. Now, let me change that. They were concerned. When you were slaves, the slave master was concerned with black life because he may tighten you up, whip you a bit, but you were property. You understand? You can't make more offspring if you're damaged really bad. He can't sell you, and you couldn't work the plantation. So he was concerned then. But throughout America, over the course of the years, has been concerned only when you were really in slavery. Ever since then, they've really been putting their foot on the necks of black people. We spoke about it earlier, pig laws, Jim Crow, you know, Knight Riders, and everything else that came along with it. They know something. They don't want your negatives to spill over into the chosen group, which, of course, is the white power structure. They take the best. Now, look at Miss Cyrus, right? You black and brown, the Latin women, you've been twerking since the 80s in a club. Miss Cyrus comes along, takes the twerking, and gets all of this crazy fame, takes the goodness from it. They co-opted rock music. They co-opted rap music. And we could go on and on and on with different type of things. They take the goodness, and then they leave you the dirt and keep their foot on your neck. This is how America really operates towards you underneath the present system. And not only just underneath the present system, after slavery, pretty much. This is the truth. They're not concerned with you. They're concerned with your negative spilling over to the chosen, what America likes to protect. So now, back to this stop and frisk. If it is unconstitutional, you can't do it. If it's constitutional, you can do it. That's the end of it at the end of the day. Now, we can go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, but that's the reality of it. And also within that reality, because there's plots within the subplots, within the plot, the major plot, there also are subplots. We are doing the violent crimes, and there are ramifications for that. And we also do put on the quote-unquote thug uniform. There are ramifications for that. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
All right, let's open up the lines. I'll just say this quickly, and I said it before, that, you know, on a macrocosmic level, when you talk about the Patriot Act was and is a suspension of a citizen's civil liberties. But you heard, you'll hear some complaints, not nearly enough that you would, you know, you would think you would hear far more people, as I'm not talking about just cross-racially, angry about the suspension of their civil liberties going back to the Bush administration, but there's this overarching feeling that once you saw those two towers fall, that, wait a minute, the issue is much larger than my discomfort for a few moments. I think the reality is, you know, this Boston bombing, you have to do something. There's a reality attached to your personal freedoms versus public safety. And right now, that facade is over. And people are going through your phone records. They're going through your email. You really don't have the privacy. Your Facebook accounts, all this stuff. Matter of fact, private business is more, has a microscope to your buttocks more so than the government. If truth be told, private business. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Again, Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. 201, tell us who you are, where you're calling from. Welcome.
Hey, guys, this is Q Storm. How are you?
Pretty good, man. Glad to hear from you.
Good, good. I'm driving back home to Philly, and I had to pull over. I'm on my cell phone, so I hope you read me okay.
Fine.
I don't have a lot to say, but I wanted to speak on the clip that you played from the woman from, I forget where you said she was from, the woman who was...
MSNBC.
Okay. Okay. Now, here's the thing. Let me say up front. I don't know that I agree with stop and frisk. Putting that aside, any conversation that involves stop and frisk, if you're not talking about the uniform, as you guys aptly pointed out, you're not having an honest conversation about stop and frisk, okay? So, let me just say, from the period of around 2002 to about 2009, before I moved to Philadelphia, I was an independent contractor, cameraman, production person, and I had BET as a client. I had Black Enterprise as a client. I attended Riverside Church. I dated a couple women that lived in Harlem. So I was up in Harlem morning and night, all hours of the day, okay? Not once was I ever stopped and frisked. Now, I just wonder if it's a coincidence that I always appear with my pants up. I don't wear baggy jeans. I don't wear hoodies. I don't wear dark shades. I don't wear my cap to the side. I don't wear huge gold chains. I don't know if that has something to do with it, but I tend to think that it might. And one other thing, and I'll relinquish the floor. I found it really humorous that a lot of my friends who are in banking, work in corporate arenas, when the Zimmerman verdict came down, all these people who you would see in nothing less than ties, two-piece suits, I mean, always dressed to the nines, they all decided we must take selfies with hoodies on. Let's get real, people. And that's all I have to say.
Wow. One quick thing, Q. Thank you for what you said. But you really went even deeper than I have even gone into. With this goes back to Henry Gates, doesn't it? Henry Gates is a Harvard professor, but he wants to try to relate to folks that are getting hemmed up through tribalism, like these folks are being phony, trying to relate to Trayvon in a hoodie. If you're not wearing a hoodie, So why are you putting this? Why are you? What is this solidarity going on? And why are you upset now, where black death is a daily occurrence? That's not by a man, a Hispanic man, mind you, or I should say, a white man who the media said. A Hispanic man that white that the media said was a Hispanic man. Well, you know what I'm saying. I'm hearing my own feedback. That's what's causing me to be.
All right. A Hispanic man that the media said was a white man.
Yes. Yeah, you know, I'm hearing myself. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
But the whole thing is this. I do not believe in exclusionary racial profiling. No one would want that. You just can't be some black person. The way this is being described, they're making it seem as if all black men are under siege with stop and frisk. I'm just like you, Q. I've been to Harlem for pretty much the same reason you were in Harlem. For early morning Bible study. And I never got pulled over. Mr. Starks talked about one story visiting a young lady in Brooklyn. It was a two-minute conversation that long. The police asked him like one or two questions. He said it in pure American vernacular, and it was done with. Oh, just be careful. No big deal. Just be careful while you're here. It was no big whoop-de-doo. It just wasn't. So, as you just said, we leave things out when we talk about stop and frisk. And the only crime that Don Lemon, only crime that he actually made, if you want to call it a crime, was that he said that it has to be examined. It's nuanced. I'm not sure about it. So these folks want you to be, well, you're black. You should be against stop and frisk. That's the end of the conversation. Don Lemon is a Harlem resident, and he's seeing things on the ground level. He's seeing some things. I've seen some things. Q has seen some things. The captain has seen some things. Things as far as what works on the street. The working machinations on the street level, we're seeing it up close. We're not talking from an MSNBC studio in Midtown Manhattan and theorizing. There's things that I've seen up close. And you have, on occasion, you sit there and say, wait a minute, what about this uniform? How come we can't talk about that? Why aren't we, this prostitute was walking around furtively. She was a prostitute now. She was one. But it didn't hold the water because she simply did not wear the uniform. We cannot tell these black and brown men to knock it off. We can't. Matter of fact, for S and Giggles, because you know this is a PG show, for S and Giggles, I would advise these black and brown men to say, you know what? If you want to continue doing your dirt, wear some khakis and a cardigan. I don't know, just to see what happens. Humor me. Throw in some glasses. Now, folks will tell you, well, you don't have to do that. They can dress however they want to dress. Well, listen, if you want to conduct a legal business, maybe you might not want to do that. American Gangster, Denzel Washington, she would tell LG4 was also in that film. I believe T.I. was in there. There's a line in the film where the main character tells you he didn't even follow his own advice, and he ends up getting caught in the system. He went against type. He conducted himself in a certain way where the profile could not be imprinted with him. The feds weren't looking at him until he decided to put on the criminal uniform. When he did that, he said, oh, you know what? We got to look at this guy. This is simple math. The math doesn't lie. All right, we're going to go to another call, and then I want to talk about Henry L. Gates, his latest PBS special. You got to check it out. If you can't see it on PBS, go to pbs.org. You must see this thing. It's a masterful encapsulation of African-American history, and it's a wonder why this isn't being shown in our school system. We need to see this not just on the college level, but I'd say from grade school going up. There's some, the fact that there was a construction of an infrastructure in Black America that we were seeing, the things that we allegedly can't do now, we were able to do it a few decades beyond being enslaved. I don't get it. All right, 703, welcome to Afro-Nerd. Tell us what's up. Make it brief.
Hey, Afro-Nerd, Bison for Life. Just want to call in briefly and ask you and Catherine something real quick.
Oh, yeah,
speaking in regards to stop and frisk. I'm not going to go on a whole lot of long diatribe. I just want to ask you, is this more of a New York thing? And what I mean by that is, you know, you've been in a lot of places on the East Coast, you know, travel. Why not D.C.? Why not Atlanta? Why not Chicago? And what I mean by that is it seems like New York is just more, I'm going to just use this word for a conversation's sake, oppressive. Or
oppressive
might be the wrong word, but it just seems like it's more on blacks in regards to police. I mean, I may be wrong in that, but is this, when you travel other places, do you feel the same way when you're, I know New York is home to you, but I just want to hang up and listen and just wonder, is this a New York thing? Because a lot of professionals I'm talking to and people are leaving New York for a variety of reasons, cost of living or whatever, but some of that has to do with it. I just wonder, is this more of a New York thing in regards to stop and frisk and how police interact with blacks, young and old? And I'll hang up and listen.
All right, I'll answer that. And I'm sure the captain would want to weigh in as well. Well, New York has definitely gotten a lot of notoriety for stop and frisk, the stop and frisk policy. Now, mind you, we've been under a Republican slash conservative slash independent regime for 20 years. This starts off with former Mayor Giuliani, and then segueing into Bloomberg. And there's a lot of money that's in it. Listen, New York is one of the most important cities in the nation. Let me repeat that. One of the most important cities in the nation, if not in the world, actually. It's the second largest city in the world, Tokyo being the largest city in the world. With Bloomberg especially, Giuliani started it, but Giuliani continued to carry the baton of really kowtowing to moneyed interests in this city. So one can make that argument that there's so much money flowing, and there's such a need to appease the wealthy, and they don't want to deal. Listen, anytime, even with gentrification, when people move in, white folk move into some of these depressed areas and then change things around, the first thing they deal with is crime. That crime has to be dealt with before these white folks move in. So, yeah, there's a certain level with this regime, with these regimes for the last 20 years, there's a certain level of we're not going to kowtow or be politically correct. There was a lot of tension during the Giuliani years with the black community. Now, mind you, middle-class black folk or black folks, if you pull them to the side, they would be honest about, well, you know, I feel more safe in this city. People have a better ability to walk around in the city. I mean, the results are pretty clear. For the size of New York, the number of murders are extremely low. We're nowhere near Chicago. We're not. We have 1960 numbers, ladies and gentlemen, in New York. So when people, when the Goldie Taylors go on and on, I'm not sure correlate the implementation of stop and frisk and the low crime rate, but law enforcement officials will make that contention. The political elite, the conservative political elite that will dissipate since we're seeing de Blasio coming in next year, these folks will tell you that by really hemming up some of these communities that have high crime rates, keeping that stuff away, people forget what police are about. If anyone studied criminal justice or studied the history of the police are not really there to – they're there to protect property. The actual reasoning for the police is to keep the element away, the criminal element away from moneyed, propertied people. That's the reasoning behind the police to begin with, and that's exactly what they're doing. My thing is, don't fit the profile. Try your best to succeed within your parameters. Racism exists. It will always exist. But you have to do what you have to do. You can't keep on stabbing yourself. We can address some of the racial concerns and these other concerns, but we got to stop killing ourselves. And the numbers are so excruciatingly high that the spotlight's on us. The spotlight's on you, black man, now. You gotta deal with the numbers. If you got the numbers down, then you can add greater credence to what you're talking about. But I can't hear you when there's gunshots ringing in the air. I'm sorry. Catherine, any thoughts? I'll try to give a minute on Gates.
Well, you said everything there. You explained the role of police, and that says everything in a nutshell. That's it. That's all.
All right. Folks, as I said before, I would advise our listenership to check out this PBS special. Yes, five parts. They're available on PBS.org. There's also a DVD that you can purchase. And I just thought that when they go into what slaves dealt with, they really deal with slavery. They dealt with a number of insurrections. They dealt with Haiti being a beacon for African Americans, specifically because they were successful in their ultimate slave revolt. But it also talks about how ingenious slaves were. Also talked about the cross-pollination of culture. Even though white slave owners tried their best to make sure that black folk kowtowed to westernization, they still could not prevent, these were human beings, they could not prevent the natural cultural exchange. It came down to food, for instance. I mean, this soul food that Africans created, taking some of their African idiosyncrasies and putting it into meals. You have to remember, black folk cooked for white people. White folks ate black food and liked black food, and it's also noted in some early works in print that many white folks just laud over black style cooking, and we'll have to go into this Saturday because I only have a few seconds remaining. But the bottom line is, when you see the infrastructure creation, the educational systems, the legal systems, things that were happening in apartheid America, you will leave your mouth open, folks. It's been real. We will retable this on Saturday for the Comic Shop / Afternoon Radio Show, The Grindhouse. We'll do it again Saturday, 6 p.m. It's been real. This is Chocolate Elvis Tosca. See you on Saturday, 6 p.m.
16.